This is a Hawaii Agricultural Foundation podcast for Eat, Think, Drink 10, Food Supply Disruption, COVID-19.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We apologize for our delay. We just had a little bit of a technical difficulty. I'm Denise Yamaguchi, the Executive Director of the Hawaii Agricultural Foundation, and we want to thank you for joining us for this special online Eat, Think, Drink Food Supply Disruption, COVID-19. We're broadcasting live from Cisco Hawaii corporate headquarters. Before we start, I'd like to send a big mahalo to our corporate sponsors, Alexander & Baldwin, Bear, Fiji Water, Honolulu Magazine, Honolulu Family, Kona Brewing Company, Lendlease, Mahi Pono, Southern Glazers Wine and Spirits, the State of Hawaii, and the Ulupono Initiative. I'm going to skip around because I want to just get into it. Tonight, I want to introduce you to tonight's panel. We have Chad Buck, owner and chief executive officer from Hawaii Food Service Alliance; Eric Kingma, executive director from Hawaii Longline Association; Tom Jones, chairman of the Hawaii Restaurant Association; Brian Miyamoto, executive director of the Hawaii Farm Bureau; Jason Wong, president of Cisco Hawaii; and Lauren Zerbel, executive director of the Hawaii Food Industry Association. Joining us to moderate the discussion is Ron Mizutani, the president and CEO of the Hawaii Food Bank. We look forward to a lively and informative discussion this evening, and we'll open up for audience questions at the end of the panel discussion. If you have questions for our panelists, please send them in the chat.
All right, let's get started. Again, thanks everybody for joining us, and Denise, thank you for assembling such a diverse group that really has a lot of a pulse on what's happening with food in Hawaii. I'm going to start with you, Brian, if you don't mind. How have local farmers really been affected by the pandemic? I know that you could probably answer that for the next 20 minutes, but just in general, how is it?
I actually do mind. I'm just joking. Thank you, Denise. Thank you, fellow panelists, and Ron. It's a pleasure to be here representing the farming industry. Farming, like any other industry, has been severely impacted by COVID-19. You know, farmers lost a lot of their markets, from supermarkets to restaurants to the tourism hospitality industry, cruise ships, the schools with the farm-to-school program, roadside stands, ag tourism operations. So even farmers' markets shut down. So when COVID really hit us, our farmers were really concerned about being able to sell their products. They had already harvested. Things were in the ground. Things were harvested. Things were being processed. Things were ready for delivery. Things were ready for the markets. And everything closed. Or they closed or scaled back a lot. So the farmers were really struggling. And, you know, I think that answers the question. I can go a lot what happened, but really, like everybody else, I mean, they were concerned about where they're going to sell their crops.
Same for you, Eric. I'd imagine the fishing industry immediately took a hit, especially when the restaurants closed down. Just a little bit about the impact.
Yeah, sure. No problem. And thanks, Denise, Hawaii Ag Foundation. Aloha, everyone. You know, the Hawaii longline fishery is one of the largest food producing industries in the state, and it's not necessarily industry. There's sometimes industry gets a bad term or bad name, but really it's about food production. And you know, we produce high quality center plate in the best restaurants, all the way down to poke grade, fry grade fish. So March 14th, we saw an immediate impact in our sort of auction value, dropped 80% overnight. And you know, it's not just the fishermen, but the food, the cold chain, the supply chain involves wholesalers down all the way through to food service and retail. And the elimination of restaurants, hotels, catering really dropped the value, and it has persisted. So what happened was we saw 100 boats tie up. We have a fleet of 140. 100 boats tied up in Honolulu Harbor. And really the tie up basically is you lose either money tying up or you lose money going fishing, and you lose less money tying up. Since then, it's recovered a little bit as things are opening up, but now imports are affecting our market. But really, as conditions persist, as tourism is delayed, you know, we're looking at severe impacts similar to farmers, and probably half of the $100 million revenue that we expected this year is going to be lost. So You know, that translates into delayed repairs on vessels. And if you're in the fishing business, if you delay your repairs, you're not going to be in the fishing business too much longer. So, you know, going forward, we're really worried that if vessels don't continue to have the revenue, the supply is going to drop off. And that's going to affect Hawaii consumers, you know, the restaurants, all the way down to, you know, everyone else. And I just want to make this note that Hawaii residents consume seafood at three times the national average. So culturally, you know, community-wise, fish is really important, and you got to keep that supply coming.
You know, it's about supply, it's about inventory, and when you talk about inventory, Chad, you talk about food distribution really changing since the pandemic arrived on our shores, hasn't it?
Absolutely. We supply the retailers, grocers, and clubs on every island, and the biggest disruption to our food supply was on our air freight side. We bring in about 1.5 million pounds of air freight a month, and mostly highly perishable products. And when the plane stopped flying to Hawaii, the food stopped coming. And as the national news was covering and showing pictures of out of stocks across the nation, across all channels, the only way that we could make up for the lack of lift, so on a normal day we could be bringing in from LAX, from San Diego, from San Francisco, all the way up to Vegas to bring that product in. And without those planes flying, we've had to engage and charter entire jets to make up for that. And no jet wanted to fly to Hawaii just to fly to Hawaii and deadhead back. And so we had to engage charter airlines that were actually flying to Asia so they could just stop in Hawaii and continue on their track to Asia. And so on a charter, on the planes that we used to bring in, or we'd be on that lift every day, that would just sprinkle throughout the day all the way to Hawaiian 9 at night. And now we're getting full planes, and so it's all hands on deck taking the equivalent of 4 to 5 truckloads, semi-truckloads on a plane coming in just to fill the need. So our biggest hoop to jump through was just keeping Hawaii stocked with the lack of lift.
Really innovative thinking. You have to change, you have to pivot. I mean, we've heard that word pivot so much since this pandemic hit. And same with, I'd imagine, retail, Lauren, with beverage retailers and the retail sector really hit hard. I mean, just your thoughts on how that all came about and
the
response.
Yeah, definitely a huge increase in volume at the very beginning. And with panic buying, we did see a little bit of the empty shelves on certain items. But thanks to the foresight of a lot of our distributor members like Chad, we actually came out a lot better than most of the mainland as far as empty shelves. Much, much better than California, where you just saw just empty shelves everywhere, a lot of panic. We actually came out pretty well here, I think, considering the challenges we have being one of the most remote or the most remote place in the world. We looked pretty good from a food supply standpoint. And after the panic buying was over, we really kind of started to see things level out, and we started to see the impact of the recession and people just not having enough money to buy food, which, you know, we know you've seen firsthand as well. And that's been sort of an ongoing challenge for us as well.
For yourself, Jason, and first of all, thanks for opening your home to all of us here today. And the supply chain really hit from the food service disruptions and everything because of COVID. Maybe your thoughts from Cisco's point of view.
Sure. Thanks, Ron. I don't think a lot of people understand that there are two distinct supply chains here in the U.S. really split pre-COVID, half in food service being meals away from home. So that could be restaurants, hotels, hospitals, anywhere you're going to meal away from home. And then 50% in retail. That was split about rough numbers, $300 billion across the U.S. COVID hits, just like in my house, I showed up when everything, the restaurants got shut down. I had a house full of ramen noodles and rice that I've never seen piles before. So we saw this shift when the restaurant shut down. Everybody moved over to retail, and that volume went up that we were just talking about. Now, if you think about it, whether it's like a Tyson chicken, they have their plants. Most of the time, they split their production. Food service sizes, which is going to be more of a bulk pack, to your retail sizes that you're going to go and get in the grocery store. But when this hit, they had to pivot. So all of the demand that we had for them dried up. So they moved their production lines to food service. So what's happening as the business is starting to snap back across the country and here, those factories, they're not ready to come back in food service sizes. They're still supporting retail. So we're seeing a lot of supply chain gaps. There's also demands on new things, gloves. Okay, the demand on gloves is going crazy. We're about to see 100% price increase on gloves from the manufacturers. Masks, right? Who would have thought everybody's going to have masks? But then you also had the meatpacking plants on the mainland where they had disruptions because of COVID. So the supply chain right now isn't in tough shape. And I think that and being in the middle of the Pacific, that is going to persist because we're 3 weeks out, 4 weeks out when we place orders. So it's affected. Oh, I just got the sign that I'm going over. Sorry, Aya. But it is going to affect us here for quite a long time.
And then you talk restaurants. And Tom, I'm going to pull you into this right here with the Restaurant Association. The restaurants, as we know, instantly took a hit. And really, when you look at the closed dine-in operations, how significant was that? I mean, it sounds like a really silly question because we all know it's huge, but how significant?
Well, Hawaii has about 90,000 restaurant employee food service workers. So one of the first things that we had to deal with was, you know, determining what we're going to do with our employees. And many restaurants were not, you know, doing takeout. The high-end restaurants, or in some cases, restaurants that are in the hospitality area or tourism area. So they had to close down 100%. So immediately we had, you know, major layoffs. And then those restaurants that were able to that were doing, you know, takeout or able to transition to takeout, still had, you know, to lay off probably 50 to 70% of their employees as well. So there's a big, you know, burden on the economy in that way. Every day I was watching the numbers going up and up, and I was thinking, oh, there's some of my employees are on that, you know, that list, that tally that kept growing. But in any event, the restaurants were, you know, shifting to takeout. And so, again, you know, as Jason mentioned, we had to be looking for gloves, for more sanitizers. We couldn't get a hold of sanitizer products, things like that. It was really a challenge. And, of course, consumer confidence. And we watched our sales go right down to about 10% on, I think, March 18th or 19th, right around then. And then slowly, over the next you know, 2 or 3 weeks, we saw our numbers starting to get back up to 15 and 20. And there's been a general slow recovery in the takeout area for restaurants that could provide takeout. And then 2 weeks ago, you know, we had the restaurants reopen. Tomorrow, bars open. I think some restaurants are, you know, in the 40, 50. If they're doing 60%, I think they're very lucky right now. So I think that's our big concern is consumer confidence. And then as that starts to increase, we hope, then the next question will be, you know, do the consumers have money to spend in the restaurants and will they be able to get out and you know, shop with us and dine with us?
Tom, I'm going to ask you in the second round of questions because I really want to know about when we look at restaurants that aren't going to come back because that's reality. And I'll switch to you, Brian, because people think, well, the farmers are good. Are the farmers good? I mean, are we seeing farmers and farms shutting down, or is this something that's you folks have been able to adapt to?
I guess I'd have to move forward. You know, unfortunately, a lot of times we don't know when the farmers shut down. They'll just shut down. It doesn't make the news like some of our unfortunately some of our popular restaurants. Farmers lost, you know, about 50% during this period. It's about $1.5 to $2 million a week in sales. So, you know, the farmers, again, they have struggled. But what the farmers were able to do, some of the small farmers, was again, to pivot, to find innovative markets with literally everything shut down or closing. Some farmers' markets were able to stay open, and we do appreciate that they were deemed essential businesses. But online farmers' markets, Kona Farm Bureau started one. We did one here on Oahu called Farm to Car. CSAs started ramping up. Home deliveries, services like Oahu Fresh and FarmLink that were really connecting the consumer directly with the farmer really helped with the direct sales. So the smaller farmers, you know, were able to find sales. It was great to see at the farmers markets really that interest and a lot more buying of local. But our medium to large farmers that were primarily servicing these larger businesses, the hospitality, again, the hospitality and the restaurants, they really struggled. So, you know, one of the things that came up was something that you're involved in, Ron, and not just here on Oahu with the Hawaii Food Bank, but on the neighbor islands also, and our philanthropy community and our counties coming in and really providing funds for the food banks to buy the farmers that have scale. Our papaya growers who ship a lot of their papayas from Hawaii Island to Canada and Japan and the United States, that shut down. Pineapple is primarily a tourist crop. If you really think about it, we don't eat pineapples really every day. They had Maui Gold and Dole here just had a lot of pineapples. So by having these big food distributions that we're buying the local products really help our farmers kind of manage through this difficult time. They're still struggling. We still need to reopen our economy. But, you know, as far as them shutting down, I imagine some, but we really haven't heard of anybody. You know, farmers, they're resilient. So, you know, they're finding a way. Their margins are razor thin to begin with, but our farmers are the salt of the earth, and, you know, they're finding ways to continue.
I think we all need to have skin in the game, and that was one of the reasons why Food Bank decided that we need to make active purchases to be a part of the solution. And then when we think about our longline industry, Eric, that's the same reason why we approached you and we said, hey, how can we keep our fishery industry still going and keeping those boats on the ocean?
Yeah, and you know, we're not in a good position. You know, the fishing industry, the wholesale processor distribution companies, we're not in a good place. And, you know, we appreciated that offer, and we had some concern because fish is a perishable product. So the cold chain is essential to get that product to consumer. And, you know, we would have to set up, I think, a little bit more logistical support to get that sort of the amount of, you know, a unit of fish to a family and how much we could provide. So, you know, we are still actively seeking to get more fish out to those in need. And to do that, we're going to need government support because it's only a finite amount of fish that we're bringing in. And, you know, the market impact, the decline was really rough in our industry. And, you know, fishing it's a dynamic enterprise. So what we're facing right now is it's almost like the equivalent of farmers seeing a drought. So the fishing conditions in the North Pacific are seasonal. And right now the longliners can't catch that much fish, whereas local trawlers are actually doing quite well. So, you know, the fishing industry is more than just the longline industry. It's also the local troll, bottom fish guys, which also have been hit really hard, too, because they lost their market value as well as the wholesale distributors. So we're all connected. We're all sort of, you know, it's all integrated to the consumer. But without increased demand locally, and a lot of that is driven by the amount of visitors, we're still going to be in a very weak market position. The one thing with our fish is that it is high quality, it's highly marketable, and so there is demand in the mainland for it, and that helped boost some of the local prices. But what we're seeing now is fresh imports coming in from South America, Central America, South Africa at cheaper prices than what we can deliver, and that's eroding the market too. So without our local economy being brought up, we are in a very weak position going forward.
There's no substitute to opaka-paka and local fish in our Hawaiian waters. When we talk about rising costs, Chad, your thoughts on the food shortages and how it's affecting us here in Hawaii, not just people like you, but even the consumer at home.
Absolutely. Early on when Lauren was mentioning that you take a look at CNN or the news channel showing the empty shelves across the state, one of the areas that was hit the hardest were just fresh eggs. And you couldn't, the fresh egg shortage, while everybody was kind of hoarding and going crazy and just, you know, emptying the grocery stores, hit the entire nation. And we had a little bit of an edge because Hawaii is used to putting in, we've got a long supply chain coming from the mainland. We'll bring in about 500,000 dozen eggs a week to feed Hawaii. And so we had orders already in the pipeline, already moving. But that shortage, the entire egg market in the U.S. is driven by the Urner Barry market. And so that pricing for eggs changes weekly. And so as the entire mainland was wiped out of eggs in the grocery stores and the clubs, et cetera, the price just shot through the roof, and it hit historical levels. So at about 2 months ago, eggs were at the historical high ever in Hawaii, in the mainland's history. And so 2 years prior, there was the avian flu, and that's because there was just a shortage of eggs, of egg farms being able to produce. And so this was driven by just the demand that went through the roof, so the markets went through the roof. Hawaii was fortunate enough because of our supply chain and relationship, and frankly, our supplier just had an awful lot of aloha for Hawaii and would short others because demand went up 200 to 300%. And would short other customers just to fill Hawaii orders. And so we're really fortunate to do that. One of our customers, one of our largest customers, the buyers from the mainland group, had reached out and asked if we could actually turn some containers around and send it back to the mainland. They were so short on the mainland.
Go figure, right?
Yeah. So that drove prices extremely high. And then the restaurant shut down. And then there was a glut. And so now we're back to almost historic lows. During that time, when the restaurants shut down, dairy producers were pouring milk in the fields, and because they just had nowhere to go with the product, and so the price for milk went through the floor. Dairy producers just in the last about 40 days addressed that by culling an awful lot of their herd. Now hamburger's really cheap. And July is going to face about a 40 cent per gallon increase, which will bring it back up to what's pretty much normal for the state. So we are starting, after the crazy spikes and the shortages, for the market to just level out right now, pretty close to where it was pre-COVID.
Lauren, I saw you shaking your head a lot during what Chad was talking about. You know, when you look at the food and beverage, especially on the retail side, a lot of people are asking, like the restaurants, like our farmers, and will they survive? I mean, can they really recover from this? We'll get into tourism in a second, but without that, I mean, your thoughts.
Well, it's hard. I mean, so as an association, we represent retail, grocery, but the majority of our members are suppliers, and they, by and large, have done massive layoffs and are struggling very much, and they do not anticipate that their figures will get anywhere close to normal until the tourism economy is restarted. You know, if you just look, tourists were 20% of our population, and they were the largest spending portion of our population by a long shot. So, you know, if you're a beverage company, it's devastating to you. And especially if you're more of a high-end commodity, that's also very devastating because our population locally has been hit very hard economically, and they simply do not have the money to spend on a lot of these high-value items. So yeah, I mean, I don't know the time frame. We're trying to be optimistic. You know, I don't want to be a downer, but yeah, we do require tourism to come back in order, I think, for the jobs to come back and for the supply chain to look anywhere close to where it did in January.
Jason, I'm glad you pointed out to those watching today. There's a difference. I mean, even when we look at food bank, we say, hey, do you have retail product? Do you have industrial size? You know, how do you navigate through all of this right now, especially what Lauren talks about, and we'll talk a little bit about tourism with all of us, but how do you navigate that? I mean, just truly, you have to change your thought process here in Hawaii, especially being geographically isolated.
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think Chad said it about his supplier. It's going to require a lot of aloha and flexibility. Like, Tom has a restaurant, we're a supplier. We're having tough times getting things. We've had product that's still sitting in our warehouses, and we just need a lot of flexibility working together, because without tourism, our restaurants, our hotels, meals away from home, they are going to struggle. So what's happening is, because we don't have that volume, we're not able to make the loads on the mainland. We can't build the trucks to get those loads over here. And when you can't do that, guess what happens? The price goes way up. And it's going to make it unaffordable for our customers. So we're trying to work with what we have, be very flexible with our customers, work on new menu ideas, things that we can do to better cater to the local population. Because like Lauren was saying, hey, maybe they're not, right now, maybe people aren't going out for a $60 steak. But how do we work together and redevelop a $10 plate special with what we have on island, and working together to help everybody get back up on their feet? Because this thing is going to take time to recover. We need tourism back. That's a fact. And without it, we're going to have this slow lag up. And at this point, everybody's just trying to get to break even on the food service side. I think retail was on the on a good side of this. They've had their own challenges, but on the food service side, restaurants and are just all of the distributors here, we're all chasing break even and making sure we can keep our people working.
I mean, that's twofold, because you're talking about the success of your restaurant, but also the people that work there, Tom. And now that we have seen more restaurants reopening, bars reopening tomorrow, will they recover, first of all? And secondly, are some of them not coming back?
Certainly some restaurants, the iconic restaurants, will hopefully survive. We've just last week we had an announcement about, or, you know, seven local restaurants. The week before that, it was Like Like. Of course, the restaurant industry is a very labor-intensive, you know, industry. We're dealing with a highly perishable product, and the margin is, you know, you say, razor thin. And so, you know, there's no secret that restaurants are one of the most volatile, you know, industries that you can be in. And so this pandemic is challenging us, you know, beyond our limits. And so many, you know, restaurants will probably not survive. I think the National Restaurant Association estimated about a month ago that they thought that it would be probably about 15% of restaurants would not be able to reopen after the pandemic. And I think the Independent Restaurant Coalition, which is another group that represents independent restaurants, is looking at that number being closer to 20%. So I'm sure there will be additional closures over the coming weeks as we struggle through this. You know, thankfully, there's been PPP money for, you know, for the industry and for us, particularly with our labor and our high rents. It's been particularly helpful. But of course, that's not going to last forever. When we get to July, you know, August, those funds that we received, you know, back in April are going to start to run out. And so without significant, you know, participation by our customers, it's going to be really challenging. So,
well, the restaurants that found a niche can really are really separating themselves with the dine in, dine out.
Right.
But again, all of this is driven by our visitor industry, and it seems like that's what we're going right here. So I'm gonna switch gears a little with everybody, and I encourage also those who are watching online to call in with your questions or with a chat. But I'll start with you, Brian, and let's talk tourism a little bit. We have no real specific date yet. And folks, keep in mind the same question, because I want to hear your thoughts on all of it. What does that mean for the future of farmers and then also our local economy?
Well, can we start with Jason? We hear everybody talk about needing to diversify our economy, and that's great from the farming industry, because there's so much focus on agriculture. But in order for agriculture to really increase its GDP, we actually need investment. We do need investment. We need investment from government, investment from the consumers, investment from private. We need public-private partnerships. We need to build capacity. So there's so much. There's probably too much to answer here. But in the short term, we do need the tourism market to come back. We do need the people. We do need the restaurant industry to start buying more. We've got some great chefs that are you know, affiliated with Hawaii Food and Wine. I mean, I'm looking at Denise, Roy, Chef Allen, Chef Roy. I mean, these chefs really help boost our agriculture industry. We need to support them, and we need them to be in business. If they're not in business, if our restaurants go out of business, and even some supermarkets, where I hope they don't, I mean, where are farmers going to sell to? I mean, it's great to see the swap meet reopen up. We need the markets there, but we need the purchasing from our locals to continue, their buying habits not to go back. But we do need, I mean, what is it, 250, 300,000 people a day? That's just eating twice a day. That's a lot of mouths. So we do rely on the hospitality industry for the success of our farmers. Some crops like macadamia nuts that I'd bring up, coffee, right? Highly dependent on our tourism and our hospitality industry. Something that really gets left out for agriculture is our nursery industry. Some of them lost 50 to 100% of their business, similar to restaurants. You know, I'm glad we're wearing local lei here, right? But with Mother's Day struggling, with graduations not being around, with tourists not coming in to wear the beautiful lei, or the hotels and all these establishments that use the local nursery products to decorate their lobbies and their hotel rooms and all that, these guys were getting clobbered, and they're still getting clobbered. So we really are dependent on you know, not just the local market, which we want to increase the local purchasing of local farm products, but also the hospitality industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Buy local. That's the message. You know, it's not a cliche. It's very real. And when I look at you, Eric, I think about the imports that are coming in that are creating competition that really affects our longline industry, but also just the fishing industry in general. And without the visitor industry coming back, that import can get even more of a player, can it not?
Yeah, and you know, as we all know, when supply channels of cheaper products get a foothold, it's hard to overturn those. And it's very important. You know, our industry does rely on visitors, on the visitor industry. I think visitors arrive to Hawaii, they're not really looking to eat a steak. They want to eat Hawaii fresh seafood. And now we've seen the proliferation of poke popularity across the country. And so when the difference between, say, gas frozen poke that they might get in California versus a fresh bowl of, you know, Hawaiian poke, I think you see their eyes light up, you know. And so it really is hurting us without hotels, you know, hotel restaurants that demand. And then getting to Brian's point, you know, I would just encourage, you know, Hawaii residents, you know, no need to wait till New Year's to have your sashimi. Let's go for it now. And, you know, make the choice at the retail establishment to, you know, maybe you don't need the everyday poke that's gassed, cheaper. Buy fresh Hawaii poke 3 times a week. You know what I mean? Just spread out your choices, and you can make a difference here locally. And we know, you know, seafood is so important to Hawaiian, our community, diverse community is so important culturally. So we really want to just ensure that the supply is coming in, that we can continue that to get fish to local residents in the meantime while tourism is still delayed.
Chad, how does that impact you, though, with no tourism? I mean, we went through a whole laundry list of things that affected you immediately when COVID hit, but we have a unique problem in Hawaii because that's our driver.
Absolutely. One of the things that we do, we use our platform because we're in every retailer, grocery, and club in the state. For local manufacturing. So we distribute for about 20 local manufacturers and help them get to market with their product. Quite often we'll help them with ingredients as well, just to, doing our best to help them be successful. We've been working with them. We've got customers of ours that only sold into the tourism industries, and they became customers of ours because they needed to get into clubs, they needed to get into retailers and grocers. And so we've been able to help the manufacturers pivot and start spreading some of their products into the grocers and retailers. We have a bakery that we support that lost all the mainland flights as they were catering to the mainland flights, and so we had to kind of double down and increase our efforts to help them get into the areas since they lost it in tourism. And quite frankly, for nobody in Hawaii, no matter what you're doing, depends on 100% local. As Lauren mentioned, tourism is 20% of our consumption, and they do spend a whole lot more than anybody else as far as demographics go. And so if you are any type of business and you are struggling or marginal at 100% in January, this is going to put you over the edge. And until tourism comes back in a very real way, we're going to see the toll of this start to roll out now, and we're going to continue to see it until our government decides to put a plan together and put the wheels back on the bus.
I think this could be a whole topic in itself. And Lauren, I know you're very passionate about this as well. There's a folks are going to say, we need this thing to move forward from the retail side. Can they survive without our visitors spending?
I mean, I don't think that the job creation side of it is sustainable and can survive at the level it was in January without tourism. I think if we really didn't bring back tourism, let's say if we wait another 2 months, there will be a lot of people going out of business. And people will have to leave the state because there will not be jobs for people here. We just simply cannot sustain the population
with jobs if we don't bring back tourism. It's not possible. There's no equation in which that works. You know, we really want to encourage people to support the local manufacturers and the farmers and fish, but the truth is we don't have the numbers, the sheer numbers, to get people back to where they need to be, and really to get our distributor members, a lot of them, back to where they need to be to hire back the people they had to furlough, until we have some type of a safe reopening plan implemented. So that's why we really do think it's important to know the plan, to know the date, to know how it's going to be safe, but to move forward with that pretty quickly at this point.
You know, Jason, I can imagine being the head of Cisco in Hawaii. Not only are you thinking about supply, inventory, chain being disrupted, you're thinking about your people. That's what keeps me up at night. When do furloughs become layoffs? And how does that impact not only the business, but the spirit of people? And how do you keep them focused and make sure that they still have a job to come to? I mean, that moves me emotionally, and I know it does to you.
Yep. Wow, you really pivoted on some questions to me, didn't you?
I think Brian told me.
Brian really.
I wanted to strike a nerve, but it really, this is impactful to you.
And that one moves me because we were rocking along so well, and nobody could have predicted this happening. And I think everybody around this table has been impacted. And I've talked to our folks at length through this crisis, and I said we have two goals right now, and the first goal is one, to get everybody full schedules that's working, because they're hurting because we've got reduced hours and they've still got bills to pay. And number two is to get our family back. And that's really what we want. I mean, we're not chasing big profit and moving cases and chasing the metrics. It's like, get our family back. Because I look at the distributions, the big food distributions that we were lucky enough to partner with you, Ron, and seeing 4,000 families come through those and see the need and to see the line wrapping around the stadium, we've got to get our people back to work. They need it. I mean, they're hurting. And until we get the dates on tourism back so we can count on it and plan for it and say, okay, you know what, we're going to see this volume jump up and we can bring these people back, it's not good. And our supply chain does not turn on a dime. If I place an order today for food, we're not getting it for 3 weeks. By the time the manufacturer on the mainland ships it, brings it out to the West Coast, gets it on, and we get it in between islands, it's a three-week process. So we can't just wait and think, okay, we're going to get an announcement from the government. Oh, we're good next week. And I can't imagine for the airlines, the hotels, everybody, farmers. Brian, since Brian called me out, I'll call Brian out. He knows that, you know, we buy a ton of local produce. We are one of the biggest buyers of local produce in our sister company, Armstrong Produce. But because we got to get what our restaurant customers need, and they demand local. So we aggregate all those purchases, and without them up and going, we can't support those local farmers. So it is all interconnected here in the state.
For sure, Tom. You know, what Jason was talking about, when we seen the cars that came through these massive distributions, very moving, very emotionally exhausting, very humbling to watch. And I continue to tell the volunteers, don't judge. We don't know what makes them stand in line. We don't know their stories. Some of them were restaurant employees. Some of them had spouses, both impacted by furloughs or unemployment. That's very real. Now, the restaurants are back open, but it's still going to take a while before fully staffed, like Jason talked about.
Yes. In particular, I think the servers are probably the most affected because they relied on tips. And so and they were fairly well compensated. So for them to lose their, you know, not only their regular income, but their tip income was really devastating. I think they account for about 40% or 50% of the restaurant, you know, employee population. You know, some of us are lucky because we have, you know, restaurants that can do takeout, and we're serving the local customers. But for the restaurants that are in hotels or that are heavily dependent on tourism because they're, you know, in those areas, they're closed and they're going to stay closed for quite some time. And when tourism starts to reopen, it's going to be a slow process. So even, you know, day one, when the planes start to bring tourists in again, it's going to take a while for those numbers to get to points, you know, to levels where restaurants can actually start to open and be, you know, profitable. So I've talked to some of the restaurateurs on Maui in particular, where, you know, tourism is such a big part of their economy, even more than Oahu. And they're just closed, and they're going to stay closed until, you know, August, September. Some of them are talking, you know, waiting until December. So all those employees, it's going to be a while. So the sooner we get the economy up and going, you know, gradually they'll start to pick up. We'll start to create those jobs or bring them back.
Thank you, Tom. I want to get to someone's question who's watching online.
Mm-hmm.
Ethan. And Ethan asks, what are ways the different players in Hawaii's food system can work together to increase the competitiveness of Hawaii's agriculture? I'll give that to you, Brian.
Wow. First of all, I wanted to talk about what Jason and Tom talked about, you know, as far as planning. And if you're saying, you know, September, October, November, farming is long-range planning, right? You plant because there's a market. The problem we had when COVID hit was you had product in the ground, product that was harvesting, and it, without a market, you've already put the money into that product, into that crop, and now you potentially can lose, you know, or even harvesting it is going to cost you even more because you have to pay the labor. So, you know, fortunately, we didn't hear a lot of our farmers plowing under. But without the income, again, to support local, buy local, so that they have the income to plant, but without a plan, why would a farmer take that chance? They're already dealing with the weather, with pests, with so many variables that make farming difficult. Why would I put money in if I don't have a market that I can depend on? Again, Ron, even talking about the big food distributions that helped in with some scale, but even smaller markets, like farmers markets, we depend on both the locals and the tourism industry. So in absence of that, you know, it is really difficult for the farming industry to look forward to plan. But anyway, the question, I'm sorry.
No, just, but it kind of relates because it's about competitiveness as well. And on the ag side, I mean, how do you team with everybody, plan ahead, even without not knowing when tourism will come back in full force, to make sure that you can still be competitive in the farm industry?
So farming, like every other business, is a business. And in order for farmers to keep farming, they need to make a profit. So we need to lower the cost of production. And again, that goes along with the cost of their lease, land costs, access to affordable water, the labor costs, the marketing, transportation, energy costs, all of those things. Those are the policies that, you know, our legislature are really helping us with. So lowering the cost of production will lower the cost of that end product, which will make us competitive. You know, we've got partners already. Strengthening the relationship with our partners will help with the distribution and all these different channels that and markets that our farmers need. But again, when we understand that farming is first and foremost a business, I think we're going to understand how to really help our farmers and our ranchers and our fishermen succeed.
We need farmers to have incentives. We need our fishery and fishing industry to have incentives as well. And that's going to come through government support and policymakers understanding the role that they too have to play in order for you folks to continue.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think it's about Hawaii's future. It's about food security. And it's a wake-up call, I think, right now. For fishing, sort of the larger scale boats that I deal with, before a boat leaves the harbor, it's a $40,000 bill. You know, that's just the trip expense before you even leave. So it's an investment to go fishing, and then it's a gamble. But, you know, the return can be good and it can be profitable, and it is a business. But the business is to provide a healthy, sustainable, clean product to consumers. And, you know, seafood is a healthy choice. And so, you know, supporting increased consumption of fish is something that we would definitely support. And that takes, you know, programs and education and outreach. But, you know, it is the future. And this is a wake-up call. And I think we do have to start to innovate, think about Hawaii's future, not only just in the next couple of months, but it is a long-term deal for us.
I'm going to be at both of your sides when this session really begins, because we need to be advocates in this cause, because there's hunger, as we all seen during COVID, has evolved. But as COVID hit, a lot of other things surfaced, and all with good intent. And Chad, I'm going to pose this question to you, and it's from somebody watching. Do you envision a solution to the severe lack in food safety? Certified co-packing and processing facilities for local eggs and entrepreneurs. Again, folks who have the right intent, but maybe not quite the knowledge or expertise that is needed, especially when you talk about refrigeration or Department of Health standards.
Right. One of the things that's lacking so much in the ag side as far as being able to get to market is the food safety. And whether that's the farming side for a wash pack, food safety certification, third-party audits that the grocers, the clubs, the retailers require, particularly if you're on a national level, that your standard needs to be the international level or GFSI standards for that. We distribute, we're the largest distributor of local beef throughout the state. We work with all the ranchers on all the islands. We're also the distributor for local eggs. We're seeing now, and to this question, one of the biggest areas that we can support local ag is to help them get to certified standards, to be able to get their products into the grocers. We've met with Donovan Dela Cruz's office regarding the Whitmore project. We're looking at a shared wash pack, a HUI for food safety. So we have full-time food safety directors, officers, et cetera, at HFA. And how do we take that expertise that a company of our size has and enables that and works with the farmers to be able to bring them up to spec, to bring them up to speed as far as check all the boxes that are necessary to get into a retailer, a club, or a grocer. We're working now with the ranchers as well on getting them up to BRC standards on the slaughter and processing. We've got great product. We've got great agriculture. I mentioned earlier the volume that comes through on the flights coming in. All that product should be produced here. It's criminal almost. That we're not producing this and having food security for ourselves and guarding our people and guarding our state. But in order to get the volumes and the capacity and the economies of scale that are necessary, we're going to need the food safety to sell into those the bigger retailers, the bigger grocers, the bigger clubs, et cetera. So a shared program is exactly where it needs to be, and we're hoping that we'll see that take shape.
I want to... Lauren, retailers learn valuable. We all learned valuable lessons already in the last couple of months. If you had one takeaway, and you've heard from your constituents as well, what would that be from COVID? Lesson learned. I know it's a tough one because we've learned many, but what would that be?
I think probably what I saw immediately happen was the emphasis on taking care of the employees first and making sure that they're safe so that they can continue to serve the general population, and really it has been a safety first mantra from the very beginning. We had no playbook for anything like this. We had to make it up as we go because we could not close and people would have starved if we closed. So we just had to make up, how to make this work as we went. And I think we did a very good job, a very admirable job, and our employees were really very brave and heroes in delivering the food and stocking the shelves, and people that just went in and did their job every day but under tremendous pressure, and I think that's been pretty inspiring to watch as well.
Dr. McCuney, retailers really, I mean, those frontline folks were frontline folks, and there's no doubt about it. I do have a question for Brian from Eva. With the challenge for farmers to get connected with food distribution programs, to food banks, et cetera, during this time, how do we connect? And I believe she may be a farmer.
That name sounds familiar. If that's Eva Lee, if that's you, Eva, then she is a farmer. And we just spoke the other day. Call us. We're doing it here on Oahu. Our Kauai guys are doing it on Kauai. Maui County Farm Bureau is working with the County of Maui. They put like $200,000, and on Hawaii Island, we've got Tim Richards and the Big Island Farm Bureau groups. I think they're about $200,000 as far as local purchasing for those in need. So, there's, and if we can't connect you, we'll find somebody that can connect you. But if I could really quickly, I know we're running out of time, address what Chad's talking about with the food safety issue. It is a challenge for small farmers. So there is a need for food hubs, something that Chad's talking about. You know, food hubs scattered across the state where small farmers can have shared services, shared costs, and they can start distributing to larger markets because some of our small farmers, again, are small. So really, you know, one of the policies that we want to push and support is more food hubs to support our small growers. Again, because I agree with Chad, there are some limitations to where they can sell because of certain requirements as far as food safety is concerned.
I agree with you. Food hubs, we talk about resilience as a community, as a state, that is mandatory to be a part of that conversation. Jason, I'm going to switch gears on you again. Hope you don't mind. Not to play with your emotions, my friend, but we talk short term because that's what we're dealing with right now. What about long term? I mean, and that's like asking your finance committee for a budget that you really don't have an idea because it's all a guessing game at this point. But for you, you can't be guessing. You've got to make analyzed educational decisions about long term for Cisco Hawaii.
Sure. But I'm going to change back on you for a second because I want to just talk about ag to Ethan's question about on the food service side and food safety. The restaurant industry, if you think about some of the challenges we've had, whether it's Chipotle across the mainland, other local establishments where we had some hepatitis issues, the food service side has been at the forefront of food safety. And the BRC certification that Chad mentioned, there's only two companies in Hawaii that have that top level certification, HFA and Cisco. We've got to have that to protect our folks. Now, Cisco actually has programs to buy insurance for small farmers because we support local. And I wanted to get this point out because you talked about incentives for the farmers to help them grow more. We can't buy enough. We actually run out of local produce and we need more. Our customers, restaurants, they want more, but we run out and we have to supplement with the mainland. So anything that we can do to help give them capacity and more consistency across the year, we're all in. So I know the demand's there, and we're there to help. We want to distribute that product. Our customers want it. So anything that we can do as an industry to support the farmers, we're all in.
That's kind of a bridge to my question, because that's got to be part of the long-term planning, even for Cisco Hawaii, that is all part of why we're here. Resilience, food chain, disruption, what we're seeing in COVID, that's part of long-term planning as well, is being a part of that solution.
Yeah, we've partnered with the Makawili Ranch on Kauai for a long time. We work with Chad and other local products, different farms, and we want to continue to develop those partnerships in a food safe manner, and it's going to take some education, some backing by the government, but I know we can get there. But to quickly go to your question, Ron, is what are we planning for the long term? I'm actually going, our fiscal year here ends at the end of this month, and I've been asked for some projections. And really, what my projections are really based on is when are we going to get some dates for the tourists to come back? And I can't give a good projection, and it actually looks, and I'm not a pessimist by nature. I'm an optimist. But if I don't see any dates for tourism, it looks slightly flat to up from where we all are right now because we have inter-island going off right now. That's not going to give a huge boost to to the food service side of the business. When that tourism comes back, we do believe it's going to take, and the restaurant, the food service side, about 3 to 4 years to get back to 100%. And my numbers are actually a little worse than what Tom shared. We're betting that 25% of restaurants never recover. That is a big number, and they are big employers. I don't think people realize how many people restaurants and hospitality employ, not only in Hawaii, but across the country.
Wow, I mean, that's sobering numbers. I mean, it really is, Tom. And my last question is for you. When we look at our restaurant friends, and I was a waiter, server, so I know how important tips are to just livelihoods. I want to end on a positive note because these numbers are sobering, very real, but at the same time, lessons learned as well for the restaurant industry. What's your takeaway from COVID?
Well, this is a real, it's a human problem. A humanity problem with really, really serious economic impact. And what I've been seeing is that the solution really is humanity. And, you know, there's a lot of really difficult stories from the financial side, but our employees, you know, how they've responded, you know, their concern for each other, for the company, our concern for them, their concern for their customers. It's been really amazing. We've had employees offer to work for free just to keep the business going. We've had customers that are dining with us just to, you know, keep us in business. They show up, they're hungry, but they say, hey, we came out to support the restaurant. You can see that. Some of our landlords, that's, I think, one of the biggest challenges for restaurants right now is, you know, we have these, you know, fixed obligations that we need to make, and it's really a challenge. But some of our landlords now are really starting to work with us and help us out. So I really think that the folks, you know, at all ends of the spectrum are coming together. We're all in this, you know, we're all in this together. I'm seeing more and more of that. So I'm hopeful that that's going to be the solution for us.
Thanks, Tom. I like that. You know, we are rising resiliently. Right.
It's a people business.
We are just in every industry. And I want to end there, and I'm going to hand it over to Denise. But I want to just say one more thing to all of you. Thank you for your good work. And I'm going to get emotional looking at Jade there, because we've all grown our friendships, our relationships. But at the end of the day, it's about Hawaii. It's about buying local. It's about supporting as much as you can the local economy. When I look at our role in the food bank, it's about serving as well, having that servant heart. So on behalf of everybody around this group, thank you for your good work. You guys are on the front line every day. And I'm very grateful from my perspective. Like I said, we were not prepared for COVID. Nobody was. My budget, not ready for COVID. COVID wasn't ready for Hawaii. And I really believe that. As a state and as individuals and as families, we're coming together, just like Tom said. So thanks again for you guys' great work. Denise.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. And I want to thank Ron because of, you know, all the great work that you're doing with the food bank and helping everyone. And I also want to thank our panelists for being here this evening. And also all of you out there who joined us for Eat, Think, Drink. Thank you again for your patience as we... This is our first, a very, very first webinar, Eat, Think, Drink. We normally have these at a fancy venue with food and cocktail, but unfortunately we weren't able to do that tonight. And for those of you who are able to add on an Eat, Think, Drink order, we want to thank you for supporting our participating local restaurants, MW Restaurant, Foodland Farms Pearl City, Gyu Kaku Mililani, Kalapa Vai Cafe and Deli, Roy's Ko'olina, The Restaurant at Hotel Wailea, Hula Hula's on the Big Island, and Big Island Brew House. We had a couple lucky draws for those of you who joined us tonight, and I have 5 lucky winners of a CSA basket that's going to be curated by the Hawaii Farm Bureau. And those winners are Michael Kawatachi, Wyatt Lotz, Susan Park, Natalie McKinney, and Derek Gabriel. And we also have a winner of a 12-month subscription to Honolulu Magazine, Jean Suzuki. And finally, for all of you who are part of the Hawaii Agricultural Foundation Network, you know that we have an online listing of restaurants and farms called Foodagogo. And I'm happy that Broken Rice, one of our restaurants, has generally donated a meal for 4, 2 appetizers, 4 entrees, and a dessert with delivery by Elite Delivery, our delivery partner. And that winner is Leanne Lum. Our team will be in contact with all the winners on details on how you can redeem your prizes. We hope that all of you stay connected and continue the conversation as we move forward to a stronger and more resilient Hawaii. On behalf of the Hawaii Agriculture Foundation, mahalo for your support of our local agriculture and food industries. Enjoy the rest of your evening.